Welcome to Unleash Your Impact, Unlock Others, a podcast about inspiring leadership. We hope to bring you grounded wisdom, stories from real leaders, and leave you feeling inspired. Let's dive in. Okay, welcome once again to Unleash Your Impact, Unlock Others. I'm Dave Morris. I'm here with Rich Horton today. And one thing on this podcast we like to do is bring you some of the latest thinking, some of the latest science that actually is very applicable to how we lead in our businesses. And Rich has read an article recently called Knowing When to Quit. So we've taken guidance from that article and we've called this episode Why Quitting is Good for You, The Paradox of Perseverance. So Rich, welcome to the podcast with me.
Hi Dave, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Now Rich, we've all heard the mantra, never give up. A lot of people have had that said to them. It's celebrated in all sorts of walks of life, sport, business, culture. But what if quitting sometimes is the smartest thing that you could do? So in this episode, what I'd like to do is challenge the myth that persistence is always good and explore why adaptive leaders may know when to let go and when quitting is a good thing. And we could look at the health costs of relentlessly pursuing goals, the fear that hides behind ambition, and how to create a space so we can be flexible in a world that actually, let's face it, that prizes control. It prizes searching for goals and massive task lists that need to be done. So I just like to sort of bust a few myths around this stuff. Now, you know, this isn't just about goal setting, it's about leadership itself, because good leaders, it isn't just about choosing one side of a paradox, it's about finding the balance between letting go and persevering. And that's not always an easy balance to find. So again, I'd like to explore that with you today. You know, how do you hold on to both? How do you hold on to persistence? How do you hold on to adaptability and keep those two things in tension? Okay, so would you just like to share with us, you know, why you thought this article was an interesting article?
Yeah, so when I read it, it resonated with me because I've always felt to some degree in the West, we romanticise perseverance and we romanticise goal setting to such a degree that it almost feels like, you know, we all have to have that that bucket list of things to do. You know, we have an endless bucket list of goals that we want to achieve in 2025. So I don't know what goals you set for yourself in January 2025, and you look at that, you know, that bucket list for 25. How much of those did you achieve? And I think sometimes when we look at our bucket list, we can feel a little bit helpless. We can feel a little bit of a failure because we've not achieved all of those things. So this article was really interesting because it talked about the dark side of goal setting and it talked about the dark side of persistence, because we have a tendency to romanticize those things in our culture. We, you know, we look up to people like Lewis Hamilton, for example, the seven-time F1 sort of world champion. And, you know, his mantra is never give up. That's his little catchphrase, if you like. He says things like, you know, we're always rising, never give up, you know, keep going. You can achieve what you want to achieve. And on one level, I might agree with that sentiment and that mantra. But on another level, it can have a dark side. I think that can have a real negative impact on our mental health.
Well, to answer your question about the goals I set for 2025, I mean, I tend to like to have aspirations. I tend to like to set myself some goals. Yes, I do have a task list most weeks. But what I found particularly, not just this year, but maybe in the last couple of years, is I've been much more adaptable around, you know, looking at those goals as the world around me changing is actually change those goals if necessary. You know, I'm not rigidly wedded to them. I do agree, and one thing I want to get across in this podcast today, we do not glorify giving up either. I mean, to achieve anything in life, you have to persevere. You know, and when the going gets tough, you don't just give up because the going gets tough. And I don't think that's what you're saying at all. But there is an element I do agree with, actually, is that, yeah, you should persevere, but you've got to know when perseverance and that whole never give up mentality is going too far. And I think that's the point you're making, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's value in goal setting, to be sure. But when I coach people, sometimes when we talk about goal setting, I introduce the concept of holding on to goals lightly.
Okay.
So holding on to goals lightly. So I think it's important as human beings that we set ourselves aspirations and set ourselves goals, because that gives us an impetus and a sense of motivation and a sense of sort of forward progress. But the danger of holding really tightly onto goals is, you know, sometimes things happen in life that mean you can't, you know, for good reasons, achieve your goal.
Yeah.
So if we're so tightly bound up with our goal and our very sense of identity is tied into achieving those goals, I think there can be like that dark side that I talked about, that if we persist at all costs, sometimes that can have a negative impact on our mental health. So now, I'd just like to explore that a little bit more deeply in this podcast.
No, I do agree with that. I think the point I was going to make here is that I think, Rich, one of the problems with this is we now live in a world where it's very easy to be kind of always on, always busy. And we've talked about this before on the podcast. We set ourselves goals. We write ourselves a task list. You know, we're very busy. And what we mustn't do is think of ourselves as a failure just because we don't hit all our goals or we don't achieve our task list at the end of each week. So one thing I never do, I don't think these days, is get to the end of my week, do a bit of reflection and go, well, you've had a pretty crap week because you haven't achieved all the things you said you were going to do. Because half the time, there'll be good reasons for that. It's not like I can't be bothered, I'm being lazy. It's actually other stuff has come up. I've had to reprioritize things. That's not failure. That's adapting to the flow of life. And I think adapting to the flow of life is an important thing to embrace. So what do you think is the cost of our mindset of getting too locked into this stuff?
So I think it's down to, you know, how we feel and this idea of, you know, when our identity is so tightly bound up with our goals and we hold those goals, you know, very rigidly or very tightly, when we don't achieve those, sometimes that can feel that sense of failure goes to the root of our identity, and then it becomes really unhelpful and really unhealthy. I think the message sometimes that's given us in our society that you can achieve anything you want is, you know, it's what I call the pop idol mentality. You know, so you know, a lot of these shows that encourage people to come on the show and you can become instantly famous and you can achieve anything you want to. I think there's a real insidiousness and a real unhealthy aspect to that idea. You can achieve anything you want. I do believe, actually, that often we can achieve more of our potential and fear gets in the way. And so we can explore that idea of, you know, when is it fear and lack of healthy ambition? You know, when is that holding us back? Or actually, you know, are we chasing something that actually is not sensible for us to chase?
So, OK, we'll get onto fear and ambition in a minute. Let's just talk first of all about the cultural myth of perseverance, because you alluded to that, and you alluded to that actually some of these things do come from the sporting world. They give us very powerful metaphors sometimes.
They do.
But I'm wondering whether those metaphors are always helpful. Sometimes clearly they are, but sometimes maybe they're not. So would you just like to unpack that for me?
Yeah. So I think I did talk about F1 in a recent podcast. So I'm going to talk about it again, and then I'll promise not to talk about it for weeks.
Forever, ever again.
Forever, yeah. Because I'm a real big fan. I'm a real big fan of F1, and the season has just ended. So, you know, I think, you know, Lando Norris has been in the headlines. Lewis Hamilton has been in the headlines. Max Verstappen has been in the headlines, and they're really interesting case studies. I think, and I'm not always convinced that using people like Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton as a metaphor for these things in leadership is necessarily a good thing. I mean, take Lewis Hamilton, for example, 7-time world champion. He's dedicated his whole life to achieving those goals. But actually, is that a good example, you know, for business? Does business and Formula One, are they good analogies for what we can achieve inside business? And I don't think necessarily that they are.
Rich, let me just pick up on that a minute. I think you're right there. So in sport, yes, so people like him and Lando Norris and loads of other people in across many sports.
Across many sports,
have had to put in massive sacrifices to get to the top of their chosen profession.
Yes.
And that's great. Yes. I'm not decrying that. I think that's brilliant. If I had that much talent in something, I'd probably want to do the same maybe. But the point is, for most people in everyday life who are leaders, our life isn't just about that pursuit of that one goal. So, you know, take myself, I have a family. I have a business to run, I have a family. I have some other interests outside of both those things. You know, I can't just put one thing as the only important thing and forget everything else, because that isn't real life for most people. So I think you're right. I think there is a danger here to sort of glorify these people that do brilliant stuff. They're quite iconic. I get all of that. Mm-hmm. But is that real life? I don't think it is.
No, and I think it's this idea of that victors, if you like, shape the narrative. So, you know, Lewis Hamilton, as a seven-time world champion, Lando Norris, you know, who's achieved his sort of childhood ambition and goals, you know, they're going to create the headlines. They're going to shape the narrative, the cultural narrative. And what you don't see are all the drivers in racing, not in F1, you know, but in all the formulas that below F1, you don't see the failures. You know, the failures do not necessarily make the headlines. And they're, you know, for all the Lewis Hamiltons, actually, there are many, many hundreds, probably thousands of drivers that have failed to achieve their childhood ambition. So there's a danger that, if you like, the victors shape the narrative. Sometimes it's called the survivorship bias, you know. So, you know, if you think about the concept of, say, war in society, it's the victors that shape the narrative. The survivors shape the narrative. Actually, it's just reminding me, talking about that, is that the way victors, you know, shape the narrative and create the story. My granddad was in Dunkirk.
Okay, yeah.
So he was a survivor of Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's quite interesting. There's an interesting story that he told us when we were kids, when my granddad was alive, about his experience of surviving Dunkirk. And that story was, he was, you know, waiting on the beach of Dunkirk, you know, waiting, you know, for all the stuff to happen. And he said that they were, you know, on the beach. It was dawn, I think it was. And he said, you know, we all looked up and we saw in the clouds the shape of an angel.
Oh, right, okay.
So my granddad was not a religious person in any way. But he said that all the people that saw the angel in the clouds were those that survived. That's a really interesting story, powerful story, isn't it? But actually, what we don't know is the people that were killed, we don't know what they saw because they were killed. So there's a sense in which the survivors and the victors shape the narrative. So although that's a very powerful story, you know, we can't know what was true for the people that didn't survive. And I think the same is true inside sport, inside business, is the victors tell the story. So I think it's we can too easily get sucked into the victor's narrative. And I think we have to put into perspective what we want to achieve in our life, what we want to achieve in our business, and to be very grounded, I think, in terms of what we're trying to achieve and what's realistic in the context of, you know, what do we have, what opportunities do we have, what strengths and talents and abilities do we have, what other constraints do we have, you know, do we have family and children, and all of those things have an impact and a constraining aspect to the goals and the visions that we set for ourselves.
Yeah, and the other point I'd make based on what you've just said there, which I think is really important, is, you know, I did watch the Grand Prix actually on Sunday. I don't usually watch them, as you know. I'm not quite as keen on it as you are, but I did watch it because I would wanted to see a British winner. Don't get me wrong, seeing a British driver win the world championship is motivating. It's fantastic. But actually, I think some of our heroes, some of the people that we need to look up to are much closer to home. They're not the famous people doing these really brilliant, motivating things. You've talked about your granddad, as you well know, and maybe we'll talk about this on a future podcast. My granddad was a massive, massive inspiration to me. No one would have ever heard of him, but some of the things he did, you know, amazing guy. These are the heroes. We've all got these people around us. They're not famous, but actually they can teach us lots and lots of lessons. And that's probably more important in this whole topic of goal setting and perseverance than it is glorifying people in the public eye.
It's what I call nobody's hero.
Yeah.
You know, there's the, you know, it's those sort of hidden people. And actually, I think as leaders and managers, in terms of the goal setting and the visions and the degree to which we are so tightly bound to our goals, it's to sense check with ourselves, to what degree are we being balanced and being grounded and have perspective on what we're doing with those goals and that vision, and how then we translate that into the businesses we lead and the teams that we lead as well.
Well, it reminds me also of, I mean, a lot of people would have heard of this book, Good to Great by Jim Collins. And when I read Good to Great, and he talks about level five leaders, people who, you know, he sort of says these are the best leaders. They do persevere, but they've got a strong sense of humility as well. And when he went through a few case studies of these leaders, actually, a lot of them you'd never heard of. These are not necessarily really famous people, but they've achieved amazing things. And that's my point. There are some really good case studies of people out there, probably much closer to home than you know, a powerful person in entertainment or sport. So let's move on. Let's talk about fear versus ambition, because I think you were starting to make a really good point about this earlier on.
Yes.
Sometimes fear, I guess, hides behind ambition. How do we spot that?
Yeah, so I think there's a danger sometimes that, if you like, our fear of failure and our sense of identity being tied to the successes that we have in life and stuff like that, and our sense of self-worth, it is so deeply rooted in that fear of failure that I think sometimes we can overstretch ourselves. So I think there's a difference between healthy ambition that's driven by a desire to grow as a human being, a desire to have an impact on our society and the world around us, that they're all good and healthy things. But sometimes our ambition as leaders and managers are fear-driven, I think. And I think that's when holding on to goals so tightly, having our sense of identity and self-worth so deeply rooted in our success, I think sometimes that can be unhealthy, you know, because as a human being, you know, my sense of worth as a human being should not be bound up by, you know, whether, you know, we achieve great things as Zentano, for example. I'd like to achieve great things with Zentano, but having my sense of identity so tightly bound to that, I think, can be unhealthy.
Yeah. So fear obviously can drive overcommitment. I think that's the point you're making.
Yes.
So how do we distinguish between what you've called healthy ambition and the opposite, which is harmful persistence? How do we distinguish between the two things?
I think that's really difficult, actually, because I think what that requires us to do is to be a little bit introspective and reflective about, you know, genuinely what is driving us to do this. And I think people that tend to be those over-strivers, if you like, those perpetual strivers, where they have an unhealthy relationship with their goals and their ambitions and their successes, I think sometimes that can be very largely unconscious. Well, it is unconscious. So what I'm encouraging people to do in this podcast is just take a step back for a minute and to think about all the activity and all the stuff that you do in your life, you know, to what degree is that driven by healthy ambition? Ask yourself the question. Take some time to reflect. And don't just be on the goal and vision treadmill, so to speak.
No, and going back to the point you made at the beginning of the podcast about, Dave, what goals did you set yourself for 2025? I bet if I pulled out that now and looked at it and thought, actually, I haven't achieved all my goals for this year, but do I think it's been a failure of a year? No. Have I grown as a human being this year? Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point. Sometimes we have to sort of maybe reframe what growth means, because the opposite of growth, if we that's the healthy push, where we grow as a human being and we keep this in balance. The unhealthy push is we get burnt out and then we become not just mentally ill but physically ill and all the things we don't want.
I mean the converse, sorry to interrupt, but the converse to that, I guess, is, you know, sometimes, and I know this is true for me personally, you know, my fear of failure sometimes can limit my ambition in an unhealthy way as well.
Right.
So I think that's an important thing to think about, you know, to what degree is fear stopping us from stepping out from taking the risk. And, you know, when, for example, we're worried about what other people are going to think about us if we take this risk or we take this step, and that limits our ambition, and that can be unhealthy as well.
I think also to get out your own head, and this is something I do a lot of, you know, because I take the lead on doing some of the sales work for the business in terms of getting out there, talking to other business leaders, you know, networking, going to educational events. I talk to a lot of other people who run businesses, and businesses quite different to ours. And when you do a lot of that, you learn a lot from other people. It widens your perspective of life. It widens your perspective of business. And I think actually that's a healthy thing. That's a good thing, because it does help you reframe some of this stuff that if you're just living in your own head, and your point is you never take some time to reflect, you never take the time to reframe, you're not seeing life from a wider perspective. I think that's when you probably can get this unhealthy push that leads to burnout. I actively try and avoid that. So I do reflective learning. I do go out and speak to lots of other people. And I do sometimes sit down and reframe what success looks like. And I think maybe that's the answer to that question. Maybe that is what people need to do so that you don't actually overcommit yourself.
Yeah. The other thing you can do is to go and engage a good coach to help you unpack, you know, some of that mindset stuff, and to help you uncover some of this stuff that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and obviously that's, you know, what a lot of our work is, isn't it? Is helping people who maybe can't do it for themselves. A coach is a good way of doing it. A mentor is a good way of doing it, definitely. Mm-hmm. But you as well as, you know, paying for coaching, there'll also be people around you in your life that can help you do that as well.
Exactly, so, right. Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and actually, asking for help from other people is not failure. For me, it's a sign of strength. Actually, it's not failure at all. It's a sign of strength.
And your key friends around you and confidants around you can help give you to help ground you and give you perspective around these things.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's move this on to the workplace in particular and look at this from the position of a workplace. Now, I wonder, in many of our organisations, is the autonomy we have over the goals that are set for us, is that limited? So for what can leaders do? Now, that might be very context specific. So if you're on a production line, maybe the autonomy you have over your goals is more limited than in maybe working in a business like ours. But I'd just like to get your take there on how do we create space inside business for adaptive goal setting, and how do we model flexibility inside business without losing focus? Because we're not talking here about losing focus, are we? We're talking about achieving things. You know, that's really important.
Yeah. I think what one of the paradox in leadership is that tension between, you know, having control and focus versus, you know, trusting people and giving them the autonomy. It goes back to the very first point I made right at the outset in this podcast, is the degree to which we hold lightly to our goals. And I think that mindset of holding goals lightly is really important, because if you hold goals lightly, it means that when priorities shift, when people inside your team challenge the goal and the direction that you're going in, you're not going to respond from a defensive place. You're going to be able to engage in healthy dialogue with your team about those shifting priorities and the need to be adaptable in context. So I think, you know, really good managers have a degree of focus and clarity and sense of direction and that sort of perseverance and driving stuff through. But they will balance that by being adaptable and using that adaptability as a strength. And I think the managers that get that balance right will get the balance of autonomy within goal setting with their teams right as well. So it's that mindset of holding goals lightly. So, you know, that if you like, it's tension in those things between over control versus giving people too much freedom and autonomy.
I think the other thing here, Rich, is probably this is about communication, because have to be really clear with somebody. You know, here's what autonomy you've got. These are the things you have autonomy over. These are the things that are non-negotiable. So being very, very clear with that communication, so people know where they have got that degree of adaptability and knowing when they haven't. That's fine, that's okay, but we need to be clear about it. And I think that doesn't always happen either in business, does it?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right.
Okay. And in terms of this paradox, is there a point to be made on control at one end and trust at the other? Because I think you talked about control there, but what about trusting people to make the right decisions for themselves?
Yeah, I think that's another mindset thing that I talked about. So one of the mindsets is about holding goals lightly. And the other thing is trusting people that they'll do the right thing, allowing people to take risks, allowing people actually within the context of the broad goals that you're setting to set their own goals and, you know, to trust them to do that. So I think, yeah, that mindset of trusting people and, you know, not being driven as a leader by being so anxious about wanting to check in with people all the time and seeing what they're doing. It's a tricky balance to strike, to be fair, and it has to be different for every person, but it's an important thing to think about.
Okay, so let's talk about some practical takeaways then. So if people are listening to us thinking, hey, I kind of get where the guys are coming from here, I do want to have this ability to adapt and flex. You know, it's not that I want to give up on my goals whatsoever, but I do want to hold them a bit lighter, to use your phraseology. Yeah. Is there a simple framework we can give people so that they know when to quit? Because the article was called Knowing When to Quit. So how do people make that decision, Rich?
So actually, so I would refer people to the article in New Scientist. And the New Scientist article gave a really good couple of questions for checking whether you're a good quitter. So they called it the goal adjustment scale. Okay, so this is not something we've invented inside Zentire.
No.
But when I read this, I thought this was really interesting. So I've got four questions that I'm going to ask our listeners, and I want you to think about the degree to which you strongly disagree or strongly agree with these four questions, and use that as a sense check as to whether you're a good quitter. Are you a healthy quitter?
Okay.
There are times to let go. So the first question, so one, you strongly disagree, two, you strongly agree with this. So first question, is it easy for me to stop thinking about the goal I've set myself and to let it go?
Okay.
Is it easy for me to stop thinking about the goal and let it go? That's question one.
Mm-hmm.
Question two, is it easy for me to reduce my effort towards the goal? You know, okay. So to what degree does that goal, if you like, take over your life? So second question, is it easy for me to reduce my effort towards the goal? Question three, I seek other meaningful goals. So that, you know, that goes back to the Lewis Hamilton sort of thing that we're talking about earlier. So fair enough, Lewis Hamilton has dedicated his entire life to being an F1 driver and an F1 world champion, and he achieved that. But what we're advocating here, actually, for normal everyday people, you know, you'll have other meaningful goals in your life, and you know, to what degree are you obsessed by your goals?
Mm-hmm.
That's question three.
Yeah.
I seek other meaningful goals. And the final question is, I start working on other new goals. And I think that's another sense check of the degree to which, you know, you can become obsessed or so over-focused on one goal or one ambition. Okay, so I think, you know, four simple questions as a sense check. How healthily are you attached to your goals?
Yeah, and I guess there's some supplementary questions that spring to mind from that. So if you're thinking about a particular goal that you have, what's driving it? Is it growth or is it fear? Because I think the point you made, actually,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
If fear is driving it, that isn't always a good thing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Depends what the fear is.
Fears
are important because they tell us to, you know, pay attention and you know, they give us information which is useful. But I think, yeah, being clear about what's driving your goal, is it growth or is it fear, is an important one. If you're going to stick to the goal, what's the cost of sticking with it ad infinitum? Because there will always be a cost of sticking to a goal. But what is that cost? Who knows? Maybe you don't find out to the end when you have stuck to it and it's too late. But I do think you probably could answer that question. Yeah. If I held on to this goal for another 6 months, you know, I'm way off it at the moment. What's the cost of doing that? Or I could let it go, do something different. And would I get a better outcome? Would that be a better cost?
Yeah, yeah. So I think the key message here is don't over-romanticise perseverance. Sometimes it's good to quit.
Sometimes it's definitely good to quit. So, Rich, that's going to be it for today. Just any sort of parting thoughts or comments you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
I think one thing I would say is quitting isn't failure. I guess sometimes it depends on the context it might be, but you know we're trying to redress the balance here around how you reframe this. So quitting isn't failure; it's strategy. And adaptive leaders, you know, really good healthy leaders know when to let go.
Yeah, I think that was the point I was going to make, that quitting isn't a weakness. You could argue it's a wisdom,
yes.
Because the yes. people who are more adaptive, if they let go of the wrong goal, it frees them to pursue the right goal. And that's actually not a bad thing,
exactly,
is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's just wrap up with quitting isn't failure. It's a strategy. And adaptive leaders know when to let go and when not to let go. Yeah. Mm. We will come back in future episodes. We will look at other paradoxes of leadership. We'll have a look at maybe how to be visionary and grounded both at the same time. But for the time being, hold on to your goals, but do so lightly. Rich, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. See you again soon. Bye-bye.
See you again soon. Bye.